Welcome, everyone. This is Dave the Mystic, episode number 441, with relationship entrepreneur and author George Ehrman. This is October 22nd, 2019, from Littleton, Colorado. Please consider signing up for show announcements through my website at www.davethemystic.com. This is a pre-recorded show on October 22nd, so thank you for listening. Our guest tonight is George Ehrman. By dancing between his heart and his mind, George has created a 50-year vision of spreading some much-needed love around the world. So get ready for the relationship entrepreneur. George was blessed to have been friend-zoned by his ex-best friend, as this allowed him to discover his life's purpose. Since then, he has dedicated himself to researching, experimenting, and writing. He wrote The Gray Dance of Love to show singles, friend-zoned individuals, and couples how to create sparks and how to be and grow in a magical relationship. George believes that all the world's problems can be solved if we never give up. His message to you, your greatest treasure lies in your greatest struggle. If you never give up, even life itself will want to help you and make everything possible for you. Well, welcome, George. I'm looking forward to this discussion.
Hi, Dave. Thank you so much for this wonderful and beautiful introduction. I look forward to have our discussion as well.
Oh, this is great. So, how did you get around to writing this book? What happened in your life that put you on this path?
Okay, so actually, I was in a very different path. I did a lot of different studies in management and marketing. I also worked a lot in marketing for a couple of years. But then 3 years ago, I actually was friend-zoned by my ex-best friend. And this is when I really wanted to find a solution. So after around 2 weeks of mourning, I was like, okay, George, you've been into the personal development world since 2011. You know how it works. It's about you finding the solution. So I read more than 200 books. I read more than 1,200 plus articles. And I did an in-depth experiment to prove that my theories are right. And in the end, I put all that inside the book. This is how the book came to life.
Oh, that's great. When I was reading the book, I really liked your ideas on the masculine and feminine archetypes. Can you talk about those some more? Because I think a lot of people lose sight of the differences between us. Everybody tries to make everything homogenous. They try to say there's no difference between men and women, but there's profound differences between men and women and their outlooks. So can you talk about those some?
So along my research, I actually discovered that there were archetypes, and we all blend between different types of masculine and feminine energies. And that it's not black or white, it's not either masculine or feminine. We all have a blend of masculine energy and feminine energy. And so relationships are always dynamic. We always see things as I need to be like this or I need to be like that, whereas it's actually about a mixture of both. So, for example, when I was doing, for example, the research, and I came up with one of the archetypes, who is, for example, Mr. Bat Sparks, the highly masculine male, or the unhealthy masculine male, he is actually he has the unhealthy masculinity in the sense that he's too masculine, and he doesn't really have, he's not in touch with his feminine energy. And it's all about being in touch with actually both our feminine energy and our masculine energy, whether we are a man or a woman. It's by accepting both sides, it's by embracing both the masculinity and the femininity that we become whole and complete from within. And this is a very misconceptualized idea that's happening today. For example, another example is that since women started to go work in around the 60s, both men and women have been masculine at work. When they got home, what happened is that the woman wanted to rest. She wanted to go back to her feminine energy. And the man wanted to rest as well. But the way men and women rest is actually quite different. So while the man wants to go back home and actually just turn on the TV, sit on the couch, and just either be in his empty box or watch his favorite football team or anything that he likes, he just wants his quiet time. But at the same time, because for him, for the man, this is actually a time where he can recharge his testosterone. It's something we can call, John Gray referred to it as the caving, the cave time. It's a very important process. Biologically speaking, it helps raise our testosterone level, which is very important because throughout the day we've used a lot our testosterone levels. So what happens is that throughout the day our testosterone level starts to decrease. And so in order for us to really increase them, we need to go and have our alone time to disconnect. This is how we can actually recharge ourselves. At the same time, while the woman comes home, she wants to connect because this is how she feels love, this is how she feels better. And by connecting directly, she's actually disrupting the man, because while the man wants to disconnect, she wants to connect. So there's a whole dichotomy and problem with that, is that the man would love to help the woman, but at the same time, it's not about doing it right away. He just needs a moment for him to be in his box, in his empty mind, to really empty himself, and then he's going to be able to reconnect. So this is just one example of how the masculine energy and feminine energy actually do work.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. So that leads right into talking about communication styles and the differences between men and women. So please talk about those a little bit more. Talking about the differences in communication styles between men and women.
Yeah, so in general, masculine energy and feminine energy have really different styles of communication. So, for example, someone who has a masculine energy tends to be very purpose-driven. They tend to, when they talk straight to the point. Whereas someone who has more of a dominant feminine energy, they tend to talk to connect. So they might say, talk without having a particular purpose. They talk to build relationships. So those are two very different approaches. They are both complementary. They are both essentials, and we actually need both.
This brings to mind quite a bit, especially people that I've worked with who are engineers, who when they talk to women, they want to solve problems rather than just listen.
Yeah, it's actually, thank you for this amazing example. It's actually exactly that. So it's important for men, for us in general, to understand that when a woman wants us to listen, it's not about listening to solve their problems, it's about listening and holding space for them. Because while we are actually present and holding space, what we are doing is that we are allowing the woman to solve the problem by herself. We create a safe space around it, we allow the problem to sink in. This is how she would feel connected. By feeling connected, she would be able to really think about the problem, because the way feminine energy or woman in this case solve problems is by talking about it, whereas men want to actually solve it by themselves. So this is actually another different point of view. It's a very interesting one. So thank you for bringing it up.
Sure. The key thing in your book are your 8 characters. Can you talk about those and sort of define them? Listeners may identify with who they are in those to some degree.
Sure. So what I was doing actually, the research in the book, and a lot of the research I found, I wasn't able to find some clear-cut archetypes. So I with all the research and the scientific data that I gathered, I was able to see some patterns that I drew into 8 different characters. So you will not be able to find it anywhere else. And the 8 characters are the following. I'm going to start by couples or 2x2. We have Mr. and Mrs. Bad Sparks. So Mr. and Mrs. Bad Sparks are actually the highly masculine and highly feminine energy types. And those are, to give you an example, like the cheerleader and the captain of the rugby team. It's that extreme. So again, I'm giving an extreme example just to make the point.
Sure.
We're not necessarily that or that extreme or that, but we tend to have a certain archetype. And so what happens is that if we are one of those archetypes, we tend to look for passion all the time. We want this ideal relationship where we crave all the hormones, all the beautiful, happy forever after. We really see Disney movies and really believe that, okay, this is what I want, this is how I'm going to find the one. We tend to have a particular type of mindset, which is actually more fixed, as in we want a finished product rather than work on it. And it's beautiful. Those archetypes are actually really great, but only when it comes to creating sparks, only when it's great to actually have this deep and passionate relationship. But at the same time, it's not enough. So, and then here comes the second type of archetypes, Mr. and Mrs. Nice Mirror. So Mr. and Mrs. Nice Mirror were actually Mr. and Mrs. Bad Sparks. But as I grew up, as society started to interfere with them, with their lives, and things started to shift, as women started to go to work, there has been a reverse in power. So here, the woman became more masculine, and the man became more feminine. And this is actually one of the biggest problems we're having today. And so this actually, it goes back to the example I was giving earlier when it comes to TV, to the man wanting to like actually rest in front of the TV and the woman wanting something right now. So this actually doesn't really work. This actually creates a dysfunction, and at the same time, there's a lot of resentment in general in this type of dynamic. There's a lot of expectations. We always expect from the other partner without really voicing our feelings. So this particular archetypes have really mainly a communication issue that needs to be solved. And then the third type of archetypes are actually Mr. and Mrs. Friend Amore, who are actually the children of Mr. and Mrs. Nice Mirror. So they grew up with a feminine father and a masculine mother. And they tend to act differently. So they're not aware of their core energies. They're not aware, for example, for Mrs. Friend Amore about her feminine energy, and Mr. Friend Amore is not aware of his masculine energy. So what this leads is, for example, Mrs. Friend Amore is actually referred to as the tomboy. So if you see the woman who actually loves to play basketball with the guys, it's actually her. Or, for example, with regards to Mr. Friend Amore, it's more of the doormat, the nice guy who actually says yes to everything and really wants to help as much as he can all the time. And so those are amazing archetypes, but all of them, while they have each their own advantages, they also have a lot of shortcomings. And all those, they can be transferred into the ideal relationship partners. And the ideal relationship partners are actually Mr. and Mrs. Grey Dance. So Mr. and Mrs. Grey Dance are actually the balanced couple. They actually have a balanced masculine and feminine energy from inside. They really come from a place of unconditional love. They have a growth mindset. So they're not here like, okay, so we're getting married and that's it. That's actually the big thing. No, it's not about that. It's about, okay, now we're in it together. We're going to help each other. We're going to grow. It's a journey. Our relationship is a journey and not a destination. And this is where they communicate together. They don't have expectations as if with their partners, as in, for example, I expect you to do this for me. I expect you to, for example, every day go walk or every day do the dishes. It's like, honey, can you please help me do the dishes today? Or any other example. They really voice it. They are really clear with their communication, and they're both balanced from the inside. They don't come from a needy place like, I want to be with you because I need this from you. It's more of, I'm complete, I'm whole, I'm great the way I am, and so are you. And we come here in a place to try and co-create together. So in short, this is what the eight archetypes are.
Okay, so when people like me who work with people on a spiritual basis, which frequently evolves into life coaching, and they say, I have a whole pattern of these kinds of guys, they're very unpleasant, they want to take advantage of me, they're abusive. What is it in that person, what's their style that is attracting these types or bringing them in? Because that person is the common denominator.
Okay, so thank you for this beautiful question. Actually, there's something that's important in relationship is that a relationship is actually a mirror of ourselves. So we tend to attract a certain particular type of partner in order for us to heal an internal part from ourselves. And another point is that what tends to happen is that we either model our parents' relationships when we're young,
uh-huh.
Or we actually recreate a relationship based on one of our parents. And so, unless and until we actually heal this part, we will always tend to attract a certain particular type of part. And it's the same. So, in order to do that, what's important is not to look at the other person, or how can we change them? It's about, okay, so I have been attracting this particular type of partner for a certain amount of time. What are the traits I'm attracting? What is it that this type is actually trying to teach me? What is it that I lack or have inside of me that I want to show up? For example, to give you an example, let's say you mentioned attracting the bad boy or attracting someone that's like not really good for us.
Yeah.
Let's say this is actually, just for the example, to name that this is Mr. Bad Sparks. We will tend to attract this type of partner because we are actually more feminine in general. And what we are attracted in Mr. Bad Sparks is his extreme or highly masculine energy. So by looking at that, if we are able to embody and really embrace the masculine energy within us, by really embracing it, we wouldn't attract anymore Mr. Bad Sparks or the bad boy or the person who's actually mistreating us, or it goes on and on.
Okay. What are some of the common mistakes that you make when you're trying to find a partner? I mean, overall, it looks like if you don't know yourself well, you're going to fall into some traps. But what are some of the common mistakes on finding the next partner?
First thing I would say is that the most important thing, step number one, is actually really to love yourself. I know it's been talked about a lot, but it's really very, very important to love yourself from within. This is the first step. Once you are able to love yourself, you won't have this needy energy. You won't have this, I need you for this, I need you for that. No. It's like more, I'm really good, I love myself, I want you to be part of my life. I don't need you for something. This is the first thing. The second thing is to actually work on having a balanced masculine and feminine energy from inside. This is another step that would help us be whole and complete and attract someone who's whole and complete and then co-create with them. Those two are really important. And the third step is actually to figure out our patterns and really heal them. So once we do all those three, then we are able to attract the right partner. And yet, there's also one important point that I want to mention. It's that we tend to look at relationships differently. So there are actually two types of skills that are very, very, very crucial in relationships. And we tend to either have one or the other. And those skills are actually dating skills and relationship skills. So in short, we either tend to have really good dating skills, the bad boys, the bad girls, those that are really good with creating sparks, with all the players, they're really good at that. And this is a beautiful thing. It's one part of a relationship. And yet at the same time, it's also important to remember me. So it's very important in a relationship to understand that there are actually two types of skills. And this is very important for someone who's actually looking for love. There's something called dating skills and there's something called relationship skills. So we tend to have one of the other, one of the two. Having really good dating skills is actually what the bad boys and the bad girls have, what the players have. We're really good at creating sparks, really good at creating passion, attraction, and this is amazing, but this is just one part of a relationship. We have the other part of the relationship, which is more of the friendship type, the communication type. The type of skills that we need to develop is like more for honesty, for transparency, for integrity, showing that we are there for our partner. So it's important to have those two types of skills to really immerse them together. And so this is my fourth advice on how to actually really be ready before actually finding the right partner for us.
Okay. So I have many clients who show up and they talk about their partners or ex-partners as coming from a place of strong ego, even to the point where they call it narcissism. How do these factor in here, and can you kind of grade the levels of ego in terms of healthy versus too much?
Well, actually what happens is that if they're in a relationship, there are always two sides. So if someone has a very high ego, then the other side has not a very high ego or is very pleasing. It's important to understand this dynamic. It's important because we attract whichever partner is able to show us something. So if we attract someone that has a very high ego, this person is trying to show us that we need to higher our ego a little bit, that our ego is undermined. This is very important. And so the way I'm actually going to talk about ego through the three stages of relationships.
Okay.
So In my book, I talk about three different stages of relationships. The first stage is actually the stage of passion. This is where actually there's Mr. and Mrs. Bad Sparks. It's all about the sparks, the passion, the masculine energy versus the feminine energy. The ego here is very high. And when we go to stage two, which is actually the reverse of power, which we have Mr. and Mrs. Nice Mirror and Mr. and Mrs. Friend Amore, this is where actually there's a reverse of power where the women are actually masculine and the men are actually feminine. And in both, in this stage actually, it's also the ego stage. So stages one and stages two are actually all about ego. Those places come from our place of conditional love. We love conditionally. I love you if. If you do this, then I will love you. If you do that, then I will love you. If you give me this, I will love you. Stages one and stage two are important. They're crucial because we actually always dance between the three stages. But what's important is to not get stuck in stage one and stage two. So, and stage three is actually the ideal stage. It's the stage of balance. It's the stage where of unconditional love. It's the stage of us really coming from a place of not I need you, but I want to be with you. And vice versa. So this is where actually ego is, I wouldn't say non-existent, but this is where ego can be put aside. It's also important to know that in relationships, sometimes it's important to be able to put the ego aside for the sake of the relationship. So it's not about being, it's important to save the relationship rather than be right, depending on how the dynamics are.
Well, that's a frequent phrase you hear on relationships now is, you can either be happy or you can be right. Can you talk about that?
With pleasure. It all depends on what you expect of the relationship or what you want out of the relationship. If you're there for only to cater your own personal needs, if you're there only just to fulfill your ego, if you're there only to just really be there, then it's all about being right. And being right in the end will at a certain point be the end of the relationship. However, if you're there for the long term, if you really want to be in a healthy, beautiful, happy relationship, it's important to understand that it's not always about being right. It's nice sometimes to just let our partner not necessarily win, but just give them cut them some slack, because we are not perfect, they're not perfect, they're going to do mistakes, we're going to do mistakes, and all of it is fine. It's all about being there and really understanding. It's about understanding each other. It's about giving this space, allowing things to happen, and deciding to be happy rather than be right, if we want a long-term relationship.
Okay. So what can people who chronically feel that they don't attract partners or don't attract the right partners, what can they do with your book in order to sort of figure it out on where they want to go?
Okay, so in my book I actually talk about a whole step-by-step guide that takes them from where they are to where they want to be. And where they want to be is actually to be in a passionate, ultimate relationship. There are a lot of steps that I talk about inside the book. I'm going to name a few of them that are actually very important. The first is actually to love yourself. It's very important to love ourselves. Once we love ourselves, it's also important to notice our patterns, to really look at our past relationships, to look at our parents' relationships, see what type of patterns happen, write them down. Okay, so the first point that I would say is actually to love ourselves. Loving ourselves is important, and by doing this, what we can do, practically speaking, is actually to embrace both our masculine and feminine energy style. By really embracing them and feeling whole and complete from within, this would be the first step. The second step, I would say, is it's important to actually look at our patterns. Really look at the patterns and the types of relationship we've been attracting over the years and see what they have in common. That plus look at our parents' relationships with each other and with us. It's all important to actually really intellectualize this process. So in relationships, in order to attract the right partner, it's important not only to live it, it's also important to intellectualize and really understand. The third step that's really important is to actually write down on a piece of paper the type of qualities or characteristics that we want in the other partner. And I'm not talking about, oh, I want her to have long blonde hair and blue eyes, and it's more than that. It's not just about that. It's, for example, what are the values that you want in your partner? How do you want to live with your partner? Do you want your partner to be working? Do you want your partner to be in the same country, in the same city? What type of lifestyle are you going to be having? Do you want to wake up every day with going dancing? All those questions are really important to us. It's important to actually write them down and really look. Once you write them down, this is beautiful and amazing. And look at what we wrote and compare them to what's inside of us. So, for example, if we say, for example, that we want our partner to go dancing, and if we're not a dancer, how can we expect that from our partner? So it's also important to start doing dancing classes, maybe, in order for us to start attracting the right partner. So it's important to actually complete ourselves, and after writing this whole list of the things that we want in our partner, to make sure that we are as well complete that list, that we fulfill that list, so that we come from a place of completion, not from a place of lack. So those are really important steps that needs to be followed. Of course, then we have to start visualizing and creating the whole movie and the whole scenario, and there are other steps also as well.
If a woman gets involved with Mr. Bad Sparks, the bad boy image, what are the chances of success in bringing him through the relationship to the point where he moves into the Mr. and Mrs. Gray?
Unless we are able to break his heart and really, really, really break his heart so that he becomes aware, he has this consciousness awakening and really shift, then we are able to change him or her. But one thing is important: we can never change consciously someone. It's only about them willing to want to change. We can always help them. We can be there for them. We can give them tips and advices. We can have this perfect scenario and really hand them the keys and everything. But if they are not willing to change, it will not happen. And over the years, we see lots of examples of people really trying, like, to change the person and saying, like, okay, I know all those ladies were not able to actually change this guy, but I will. And you will see, I really will. Or the same thing with the women and guys. It's really not, we cannot. It's really, and there's no point for that. Because by working on ourselves, by really loving ourselves, by becoming complete from within, then if this person is really good for us, then they will change and be with us. If they are not, then automatically the universe, something will happen so that we will each go in our own way, and then we would attract the right partner for us. So it's really important to look at things from the inside out rather than from the outside in. Because what we tend to do in general, we look at things from the outside in. What is this person going to do for me? How can this person fulfill my relationships? It actually, in one of the articles I wrote recently, there are four types of love and four types of way of loving. There's our love with the universe, our love with the creator, with the light, with whoever powerful source that we believe in, if we believe in something. There's the love with ourselves, our own relationship. So we have the relationship with ourselves. Then we have the relationship with others, etc., etc. But it's really, really important to notice and to know that our relationship with ourselves is really, really, really crucial. It's the relationship with others is just a reflection of our relationship with ourselves. It's just a continuation. This is really, really crucial and important to know.
Give me some more concrete examples on that, on how a misunderstanding of yourself is mirrored in, I'll say, an unhappy relationship.
Okay. So, for example, let's say I'm a girl and I grew up with a father that was absent, emotionally or physically, he simply wasn't there. I tend to attract partners that would be absent in one way or another. So I can be in a relationship and my partner is not present. or I can not be in a relationship but keep on attracting either married people or people that are unemotionally, are not emotionally present. This is an example of how things can happen. So unless and until we heal that part, unless and until we come at peace with, in this case, with our father, not necessarily directly. It's about forgiving the dynamic and really understanding it from the core for ourselves, not for our father, but for us, so that we can able to, we heal that. And once we do heal that, we'll start attracting different types of partners.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I guess it's obvious, but you know, maybe it needs to be said some more, and you can talk about it, that so much of the way we approach relationships as either late teens or adults reflects how our dynamics and our families worked as children.
Yes, of course, of course. So what we tend to do is actually, unless and until we heal and we solve our relationship with our parents or caretakers or people that are important to us as we grew up, that we actually modeled, unless we heal those relationships, they will always affect us. And this can go on for years. It doesn't have to be, because what's important to know is that we tend to stop learning at 6 or 7, emotionally, for example. And what happens is that we, in general, we have an emotional level of 6 or 7. So we are 6, 7 years old when it comes to our emotions. We can be like 50 or 60 or 70 or 100 years old. Or it's not really about the physical age. It's more about the emotional age. And emotionally, we can be stuck actually to 6 or 7 years old or 8 years old, depending on how we evolved and how we grew out of this. And sometimes we can pass all our life not actually growing from this stage.
Okay. Talk a little bit about, I have so many clients who are women who are sexually abused as children. What do they have to learn and overcome from sexual abuse to become more healthy in adult relationships?
So first of all, it's definitely not an easy thing. It's really heavy.
Yes.
And sometimes it can take years. It's not an easy thing. Again, attracting this type, we always attract for one reason or another. So it's either, sometimes it can be generational, so sometimes it can come from, if it's, for example, one of our parents that have abused us, or if it's someone in our environment that abused us, or whichever the scenario, there's a pattern there. And so the way to actually deal with that is to actually love ourselves again. It's really to embrace this love, to learn to love unconditionally. To love unconditionally, it's easy. I know it's easier said than done. I know it's not. It's hard, but it's actually a message for us to actually be stronger for other people around us. If we take the example of Oprah, for example, so she, Oprah Winfrey was actually abused, and this abuse actually helped her. Transform her life and the life of those around her by really learning and accepting unconditional love. It's always going to lurk somewhere there, but it's important to actually really learn unconditional love. It's about learning how to forgive, because probably we are not forgiving ourselves. We are being too demanding. So loving ourselves, coming from a place of care, would actually help us.
Okay, that's good. Returning back to another topic, a truism I heard in one of my psychology classes years ago, and it seems to be true, it's kind of funny, but it's the idea, here's the statement, men marry women hoping they won't change, and women marry men hoping they will change.
I love it, and it's actually very interesting. And they're both wrong, unfortunately.
Yes.
Unfortunately. So, first of all, no one can change another. This is the first and most important thing. So, there's no point. Why would we want to change another? If both of us come from a place of growth mindset. So, here's the thing. In relationships, generally, we also tend to have two different types of mindsets, either fixed mindsets or growth mindsets. And if we come from a place of fixed mindset, which is the quote that you gave, expecting the other person to be or act in a certain way, then this will eventually lead to a problem at a certain point. It can be as soon as the relationship starts, it can be as soon as they get married, it can be 10 years later, 50 years later, but it's going to happen at a certain point. Because they come from a place of expectation, expecting something from the other person, expecting them to change or not to change or be the same or not be the same. Someone that comes from a place of growth mindsets comes from a place of, okay, I am me, you are you. We are both willing to change together. We are both willing to go there without expecting anything. Of course, as humans, we are all not perfect, so we always kind of expect something. We always expect love in one way or another, but it doesn't have to be like, you won't change or you're like that, that's it. So it's really important to come from a place of growth mindset. Accepting the other person just the way they are, if they change, to really understand what they are going through, why they are changing, be there with them. Because in general, what tends to happen with people that have growth mindset, they come from a place of both wanting to change and grow together. And as they do that, as they study together and grow together, then they wouldn't necessarily, or at least not in most of the cases, grow apart. They would actually grow closer because they're actually having the same type of learning and they're going together in the same direction.
Okay. Well, this helps on something. You know, a lot of people are into their second marriages, possibly their third marriages. And as I talk to these people, I get the feeling a lot of them approach their first marriage with what you're talking about, the fixed viewpoint. They approach it with an image of the partner supposedly being like their parent of the same sex. So, you know, they expect the wife to do what the mother did for the father. And that didn't work very well, and eventually it breaks down and they don't grow through it and get past it. Is that your experience with this for multiple marriages?
Yeah, so this is, it can be that, definitely it's very true that we tend to have a fixed mindset in the first marriage and then the second, but most of it's also, it's not just the first relationship. What tends to happen is that if we have more than one relationship and it doesn't work out in the second or third, it's that we still have a fixed mindset somewhere.
Okay.
We still have this entitlement mentality somewhere. We still have this unresolved pattern somewhere. We still have this communication issue somewhere. So what I would say is that, okay, we got married, we got divorced or separated. Our first marriage or relationship didn't work out. So instead of just jumping into the second one or the third one or the fourth one, let us take a pause. Let us take a break, relax, and really look at things in a different way. Try to really heal ourselves. Look at the patterns. Why did this happen? Okay, because in a relationship, there's never one problem. Like, it's never one partner's problem. The problem always comes from both parties. It's never one or the other. It's always both. Either one didn't speak enough or the other didn't hear enough. There's always two sides. So by analyzing what happened in the relationship, now, of course, it can, as the relationship grew and stuff, things might go, one partner might be more at fault than the other, but when it originally starts, it's always both partners' fault. Because one either, for example, one didn't communicate or voice that for a while he or she hasn't heard, I love you, and so this led to resentment and accumulation of stuff. It's important to actually really, really communicate and really say things just the way they are. So it's important, it's really important to look at the patterns and see how things go before jumping to the next relationship.
Okay. Another thing, totally different topic that you brought up in the book is the difficulty of, especially the men, using pornography. What are some of the difficulties that come out of that?
Okay, so pornography is actually more of a feminine energy type of activity. So instead of actually really going out there and finding, like if we are in a relationship, so finding a solution with our partner, or if we are single, to actually really go there and find someone, we actually revert back to pornography to satisfy our needs. It can happen once and twice, and it's okay, but it's actually really not good. So one thing, I've been reading a book by John Gottman, who's a very big influence of my work and of the relationship work in general. And in one of his books, he mentioned something very important, that pornography actually disconnects us from our partner. It disconnects us from, and this is very crucial to understand, because when we think, oh, it's just images or just videos or just sound, and I can do it once or maybe twice, oh, but my partner is not there for me, it still affects us. It still creates a shift between or a rift between us, and this is very, very wrong. So instead of actually going and watching porn, it would be a good idea to actually go and talk to our partner, really, like, before things escalate, to actually take things from the beginning, like, listen, honey, darling, we have a problem. Let's talk about it. I feel that my sexual needs are not being met. I feel that if we could do this or that, I would love us to try. Now, of course, sometimes, depending on the situation, for example, if it's a newlywed couple, they just have a new baby, it's important to understand that hormones are at play and that women start to have a different hormonal cycle in order to protect the baby. So there's testosterone in the mix, and etc. So the woman in this case might not be very open to have sex at all, or have sex all the time. So it's important for the man in this case to be more patient. So it depends on the scenarios. But basically, porn is actually not a good idea. And it's really recommended to actually really either communicate with our partner if we are in a relationship, try to find a solution between us. If you are not in a relationship, then actually really go in the game out there. If we go from a spiritual aspect, it's important to note that if we want to attract our soulmate, the more we actually use porn, the more our soulmate will go further away from us.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So with the work you have a goal of lowering the divorce rate. How's that going to look?
That's going to look beautiful. So it's not a 1 year or 2 year project. It's actually a 50-year project, and I really have a lot of ideas that I really am working on. It's going to take some time, but I really, really, really believe that I'm able to really decrease the rate of divorces. And this is really important, because by decreasing the rate of divorces, it's more about really understanding ourselves, understanding each other, being more in a state of unity, and really bridging the gap between us and between each other.
Well, with all your work and with all your reading and everything, what do you think is the effectiveness rate for the average marriage counselor or marriage and family counselor? Because there's so many of them out there. How many actually help?
In all honesty, I didn't come across this number, so I'm not going to be able to answer you this question.
I just wondered if you've been talking with them, or you've been talking to people as you're researching your book and their experiences with it. So that's fine.
You meant to say by a specific number of divorces that are happening, or how they were successful, like doing that?
No, something I heard a long time ago was from a person who was a marriage counselor, and they said that the majority of people who come are actually seeking permission to divorce. They're not seeking to fix the relationship. But based on your details on how you view relationships and the dynamics there, it makes me wonder how many marriage counselors out there are actually successful or effective.
Again, I didn't ask this question, so I'm not very sure, but what I can say from the research that I've done is that most of the time, what's happening is that people that are in a relationship come to the counselor in the last minute, so it's like, it's really out of the... So they don't really come to a marriage counselor at the beginning of the problem, they come at the end of it.
Yes.
And this is already a problem. So had they come sooner, then yes, of course... The level of help would be much higher, they would be much better, and they would be able to help a lot better. But the fact that they are coming last minute and they're taking relationships as in we shouldn't work for them and things should be natural and he's the one for me or she's the one for me and things should be just natural, we shouldn't fight, we shouldn't do this, we have a lot of expectations.
Yes.
So by dropping our expectations and actually going to our counselor directly, this is when we can actually like really help the relationship and turn things around. If this answers the question in some way.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. Okay, well, one of the things that people can do based on your information is they can go to your website and determine what type of character they are in this?
Yeah, so actually the personality test is actually under construction. So what people can do, what your audience can do right now, actually, is go to the following link, www.greatdanceoflovebook.com, www.greatdanceoflovebook.com, GREYDANCEOFLOVEBOOK.com. And once on that page, by actually buying the book, what they will be doing is that they will be receiving 8 bonuses worth more than $700 from very influential people such as Peggy McCall, Marcy Shymoff, Robert Clancy, that have been really kind to actually be giving those gifts away. And also by actually buying the book, they would be actually donating $1 from the profits of the book to the Unstoppable Foundation in order to raise children around the world.
That sounds great.
And the personality test will actually be ready within a month. So within a month, they will be able to go there, take the test, and discover which of the 8 relationship character types they are. And then I will be taking them on a step-by-step guide from where they are to where they want to be, which is the ultimate relationship partner.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, again, your book is The Grey Dance of Love, and Grey is spelled G-R-E-Y, so The Grey Dance of Love, Step-by-Step Guide to Finding Love That Lasts, and this is also available at Amazon, correct? Okay,
yes.
But exactly. Obviously, there are benefits and bonuses to going to your website to get the book and also the other materials, so that's wonderful. Well, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule. I know this has been a challenge being on foreign travel at the time we're trying to do the interview, and appreciate you making time for this.
Thank you so much, David. It was really a pleasure. And thank you again for being able to accommodate yourself as well.
Sure. Well, thank you. For our listeners, please join us next week. We're having returning guest and medium Shirley B., and it's always a fascinating show with her. So thank you, everyone, for listening to this show, and blessings, and have a great week, and take care.